Please note that due to the graphic and adult nature of this topic, this show is not recommended for children or sensitive listeners.
This is Community in Conversation with Kathy Kayla, starting conversations that matter.
Good morning and welcome to Community in Conversation. I'm Kathy Kayla. Today, this is episode 3 in a series I have done on paedophilia. Part 1 gave us understanding of paedophilia in general when I interviewed Bly Reed, a non-offending paedophile. Part 2 dealt with the brain science of paedophilia when I spoke to scientist, psychologist, and world expert in the field, Dr. James Cantor. You can find both podcasts on chaifm.com under Community in Conversation and on Spotify under chaifm. Knowledge is power. It is the difference between being proactive and reactive. This week, I am looking at mandated reporting. So let's begin. Let's start with the definition of mandated reporting. According to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the legal definition of mandated reporter is an individual who holds a professional position, for example, of social worker, physician, teacher, counselor, spiritual leader, that requires him or her to report to the appropriate state agency cases of child abuse that he or she has reasonable cause to suspect. I reached out to school principals, teachers, psychologists, and rabbis. I asked them two questions. The first question was, do you know what a mandated reporter is? And the second question was, would you report a case of child sexual abuse if you found out about it? If yes, to whom would you report it? These were the responses.
Hi, Kathy. You've caught me on the trot, but it's a very important subject. I hope that I can do it justice in these next few minutes. So I know that a mandated reporter is somebody who is required by law to report any abuse that might be happening in the community. So legally, one would be required as a teacher or as a medical professional or any professional who has care of children in their hands. Has a legal requirement to report any situation of sexual abuse. And that would apply to any of the teachers, any doctors, any rabbis, anybody who has the care of people in their hands. Beyond a mandated reporter is the moral requirement of any adult who is aware of abuse to report abuse so that it can be terminated and that we can protect our children. Now, what happens if one is aware of abuse? What becomes quite a difficult challenge is to discern the gray areas. Like, is there abuse? Is one convinced that there's abuse? And for that reason, we utilize the services of a highly professional individual who has trained our teachers at the Torah Academy and our students as well, so that if there's any gray area and one's not quite sure whether this is a situation of abuse, one has professional input to define exactly whether the situation is an abuse situation that needs to be reported. If one is absolutely sure that it is an abuse situation, one has to report it to the right authorities, which could be the police. But the Jewish community utilizes the Chevra Kadisha, who are legally able to receive that information. And that would be the place that we would report abuse to. We would take advice as to whether something is clearly a situation of abuse or not. That needs to be discerned and defined. And one has, in every institution, the individuals who represent those institutions. So for example, the principals or the social workers and the dean and the head of the school or the rabbi in the community, which would be the first port of call should something be suspicious in that environment. So that would then be taken to get clear advice from a professional whether this is a category of abuse. And if it is so clear that one doesn't need that advice, then one would proceed directly to the Chevra Kadisha as a Jewish community, a member of the Jewish community, to ensure that we have reported it to a legal body that has been empowered and entrusted to receive such information.
Hi, Kathy. Being in a school environment, teachers act in loco parentis for our students. Every member of staff and ultimately the executive head of a school, such as myself, are designated mandated reporters to relevant authorities of any ill treatment, neglect, abuse, sexual abuse of children in our care. Now, there are several pieces of legislation placing this mandatory reporting obligation on various professionals, which specifically include teachers and or caregivers in the educational sector. The most important of which are the Child Care Act, which states that if a teacher has a suspicion that a child has been ill-treated or suffers from any injury, single or multiple, the cause of which probably might have been deliberate, or suffers from a nutritional deficiency disease, the teacher is obliged to report the matter to a Director General at the Department of Social Development. The Children's Act Amendment Bill states that if a teacher who on reasonable grounds concludes that a child has been abused in a manner causing physical injury, has been sexually abused or deliberately neglected, and if it is in the best interest of the child concerned, it must be reported to a designated child protection organization or the provincial Department of Social Development. Now, there is a penalty should a teacher fail to do so, and this could be a fine or even imprisonment. There are several other pieces of legislation which place the legal obligation on all people, not only teachers and or caregivers, to report abuse of children, such as the Criminal Law Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Bill, where if a person has knowledge that a sexual offence has been committed against a child, that person must report such knowledge immediately to a police official. A person who fails to report such knowledge is guilty of a criminal offence. The Films and Publication Amendment Act of 2004, if a person has knowledge or the reasonable suspicion that any offence relating to child pornography is being committed, that person has an obligation to immediately report this fact to a police official. And finally, the Prevention of Family Violence Act of 1993, where if a person has the reasonable suspicion that a child has been ill-treated or suffers from any injury, the probable cause of which was deliberate, that person must immediately report such circumstances to a police officer or clerk of the children's court or a social worker in a child protection agency.
A mandated reporter, as far as I understand it, is anybody that works closely with children, so a teacher or a minister, anyone that has regular contact, that becomes aware of sexual abuse, then they are required by law, as far as I understand, to actually report the sexual abuse. If I did become aware of sexual abuse, I most certainly would report it. In this country, I don't really know if the police is the right place to go to, although it would be the obvious place. So I think I would probably say that I would get hold of the Teddy Bear Clinic. They are very knowledgeable, they deal with sexual abuse cases, and they would actually then be able to advise me where is the best place to take it further.
There are certain bodies, certain groups of social workers, counsellors and so on, who are the correct channel to whom abuse of any nature needs to be reported. It is well understood for any of us who work in this kind of a realm that as soon as one hears of abuse of a sexual nature to children, etc., one has to report it to those people who in turn are obligated to report it to the correct authorities. We are privileged to have in our community the Chevra Kadisha and Jewish, it used to be the Jewish Family Council, now known as Jewish Social Services, who are mandated with this task within our community. If one doesn't feel comfortable in going to them, one can go to other authorities such as As has been mentioned many times, the Teddy Bear Clinic, but they're not the only ones. Yes, of course, one can go to the police, but one feels that you'd get a much more compassionate and much more caring kind of an atmosphere by going through the Chira Kedisha or to the Teddy Bear Clinic. And yes, we have and certainly come across over the years many different cases which have of course always been reported, and those reports have always met with kindness and compassion and a very, very solid way of actually dealing with all of these things within the community. And I think that the community should be comforted and rest assured that these matters will be dealt with properly and appropriately, with great sensitivity to the victims of this terrible, terrible scourge. I personally have had times when I've reported to the Chevra Kedisha and to their social services, and I've also personally been when that wasn't felt to be a comfortable enough kind of an atmosphere for particular victims, have personally also attended to seeing to these things being reported to Luke Lamprecht's, for instance, at the Teddy Bear Clinic, for these things to be dealt with correctly, appropriately, properly, and by the law. So hopefully we can put the word out there that this is something that needs to be done by all parties, as the Beth Din has called upon people to do this as well. We need to make sure that these things are appropriately, correctly, and swiftly dealt with in order to enable our community to be protected, and for our children particularly, and those who are vulnerable, to be protected from all kinds of abuse.
So I do believe that one has to report a case. It's our responsibility as human beings, as Jews, as citizens of the country. To whom would I report? Definitely to the police. I understand there is actually a sexual and violent crime unit that deal with these cases. I do know about amazing work that was done and definitely has to be reported. Obviously, it's also a question how you close to this case. So if you know that it's someone in the community, I would suggest to approach police and the rabbi, because it needs to be taken from different points of view. It needs to be taken to the consideration from the Jewish point of view, and let's say if it's happening in the community, and of course from legal point of view. It doesn't matter who the person is, it has to be reported. And if, let's say, he is someone influential in community, or he's someone famous in the community or in the country or etc., it doesn't matter.
Hi Kathy, first of all, thank you for putting the spotlight on this. Unfortunately, it's a very important, albeit uncomfortable, topic that has to be covered. So in answer to your questions, yes, I do know what a mandated reporter is. As a matter of fact, not only my Rabbi Vishal, but I teach at Torah Academy as well, and the school is really, really on top of things. So every year, without fail, it was teacher, now it's every single adult on the premises. So you're talking about the groundskeepers, the cleaners, secretaries, everybody has to go through a course where it's explained, mandatory reporting, what to look for, what to do with your findings, etc. So really, really on top of things. We've been doing this for a number of years already. And to your question about would I report a case of child sexual abuse, most definitely, even if I had a doubt, I would report it to, if it was in the school, I would report it to either the social workers or the principals. And if it was something in my shul, in my community, then I would take it straight to the Chev. So I'll definitely work through our own Jewish communal internal channels, as I think that's the best way to go. They would know how to deal with it, I imagine. Yeah, I hope that helps.
Thank you to everybody who sent me the responses. When I reached out to these professionals, these mandated reporters, One person contacted me and asked me if she could rather send a statement and have me read it. I agreed, and this is the statement that I received. I was one of the heads at a Jewish day school in Johannesburg. We had a horrific incident at the school when a teacher had been grooming our boys' class. It started with her reading and discussing 50 Shades of Grey to the class. These boys were between 11 and 12 years old. It then moved to her getting boys to sit on her lap while she was reading. The boys had been threatened about talking to an adult, and if she felt they might talk, they were given a name the whole class had to call him by. One of the boys broke down to his father, "Thank God," and immediately came to us. We immediately fetched the teacher, brought her into the office, and led her off the school property. The police were called in, and the children, together with their parents, spoke to the police in confidence. This then went to the court prosecutor, and understandably, or unfortunately, the parents, most of them, didn't want their children to do an on-camera confession where this teacher would be present in court. The prosecutor then said not enough of the children are prepared to appear, so it cannot be taken further. We tried and had meetings together with our lawyer and tried to change the prosecutor's mind, but to no avail. I phoned the education department, but nothing. I phoned the SAC officers, but they said officially they can't do anything without the children coming forward, but they will put a note next to her name. I'm not sure if they did. The chutzpah is that she gave my name as references. A Jewish school in Cape Town, an all-pairs position, and I openly told them what I know. I started receiving personal threats from her, which I gave to the lawyer, but our hands were tied. These children were minors, and there should have been allowances made for them to just talk in the presence of their parents and a police social worker. I have no idea where she is, and just pray that she isn't working with children. I know everybody has a right to be represented, but she was represented by a grandfather in the Jewish community, and I really feel he should have advised her to go for a mental evaluation. It has scarred me for life, and I'm sure our boys and their parents. In this statement, it is clear that the law failed the victims. Now let me be clear. Everyone deserves a defense, no matter what the crime. During my research on pedophilia, there are stories that came across my path that have left me horrified and reeling, not just in the failure of the law to protect the victims, but in community organizations who we trust, who clearly failed to report the cases to South African authorities. I sat for almost 3 hours two Sundays ago as a rabbi in the community told me of how he had approached different communal organizations and none had acted. One organization did take a statement and then lost the statement. It recently did resurface. Yes, the very organizations we would assume to be the ones that would respond, that are there to help protect the community, to ensure that no Jew is left behind. The Beth Din, the Ecclesiastical Court, the Jewish Welfare, the Chev, you know exactly what case I'm referring to. What I haven't told you, dear listener, is that these cases were reported to our communal organizations 4 years ago. 4 years. That's a long time to sit on information of abuse. How many boys have been groomed in that time? In another case, a sexual predator of young girls has appeared before the Beth Din over 10 times facing allegations of sexual abuse of young girls. Over 10 times? How many times does a pedophile or a molester need to offend before it's reported to South African authorities? Are we going to keep burying these stories so that the pedophiles and the molesters continue? How many times before the molester is charged, brought to book, and prosecuted? Tell us, communal organizations, then at least we'll know. It is clear to me that as a community, we need to educate ourselves and our children. Right now, we are losing this fight. It is swept under the carpet. It is not spoken about, often because of the pain that it causes to even face the possibility that our child has been violated. Parents don't pursue prosecution. The molester will either carry on with their business as usual or relocate and start up where they are not known. In some cases, offenders are put on a plane and sent to Israel. Why? Well, here's the clincher. Because a victim of sexual abuse will not easily find a shidduch, a marriage match, in later years. That is why it's not reported. You and I need to do better. We need to check our values. I have learned so much during this time of investigating paedophilia. I have spoken to the most incredible, knowledgeable people about something that I really knew very little about. And here are some things that I've learned. If molesters are not prosecuted, they won't go into a rehabilitation program. And if they don't go into a rehabilitation program, the statistics show us that they will continue to offend. Secondly, there will also be no record of their offenses. A criminal record will help communities by creating an awareness of who they are and thereby preventing molesters having access to our children. We need a registry. We need an open registry. The damage to child victims of sexual abuse is immense. Take, for example, a young heterosexual boy who is molested by an older male. When the sexual abuse starts, the body responds. The victim's body will respond in a sexual way. Now, this is a heterosexual boy. This is going to lead to questioning of gender identity. He knows he's straight, so how could he have responded sexually to another male? Because the body is mechanical and will respond. It's involuntary, and it can even happen in female rape victims. It is the body's ultimate betrayal. But that young boy, who is heterosexual, will have a lot of difficulty in personal relationships with women if he doesn't seek therapy. In a worst case scenario, he may even go on to become a molester himself. We need to make peace with the fact that molesters and offending paedophiles can be extremely charming. They can be very charitable, charismatic. If they weren't, they wouldn't be able to gain the trust of the child and the family. Molesters don't have horns and they don't look evil. We need to do better. We need to teach our children to judge people on their behavior. We have to teach our children about what is appropriate and inappropriate engagement with an adult, not about touching. If we're only talking about inappropriate touching, it's already too late. It all begins with grooming. Then the topics of conversation will change. The language will become more sexual. I just want to define grooming for you. The Royal Commission into Sexual Abuse defines grooming as the use of a variety of manipulative and controlling techniques with a vulnerable subject in order to establish trust or normalize sexually harmful behavior. Grooming can happen in a range of settings: schools, churches, synagogues, or the homes of family and friends. A pedophile may groom a child by giving him gifts, compliments, or favors to gain his trust so that he can abuse the child. That same pedophile may groom the child's family by bringing family gifts, babysitting, and becoming a trusted family friend in order to abuse the child. That same abuser may abuse the entire community, such as in the case of a beloved football coach, by gaining its trust in order to more easily have access to child victims. In this way, the abuser is insulated, because if the child tells, no one will believe that he, the beloved community member, is an abuser. All of this is grooming on various levels. Society is governed by its laws. As Jews, we understand this profoundly. We have at least 613 of them. Regarding the legislation in South Africa, this is what the law says about mandated reporting. There are two specific pieces of legislation in place to deal with the mandatory reporting of child abuse suspicions and knowledge. These two acts require that the suspicions for the abuse must be reasonable and that the report of such reasonable suspicion is made to the relevant specified authorities. These two pieces of legislation are the Children's Act 38 of 2005 and the Sexual Offences Amendment Act of 2007. So who must report reasonable suspicions of child abuse and neglect? Section 110.1 of the Children's Act mandates the following categories of professionals to report any reasonable suspicion of child abuse and neglect to the relevant authorities. Correctional officials, dentists, homeopaths, immigration officials, labor inspectors, legal practitioners, medical practitioners, midwives, ministers of religion, nurses, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, psychologists, religious leaders, social services professionals, social workers, speech therapists, teachers, traditional health practitioners, traditional leader or member of staff of volunteer worker at a partial care facility, drop-in center, or child and youth care center. If you fall into any one of those categories, you are a mandated reporter. Which leads to the next question. To whom must the report be made? According to the law, the reporting of the reasonable suspicion of abuse must be made to either a designated child protection organization, so that's either Child Welfare or Childline, or to the Provincial Department of Social Development, or to a police officer. The report made by the professional must be in the prescribed format, which is Form 22 of the Regulations to the Children's Act. When must the report be made, you ask? This is important, especially for our communal organizations. The report must be made as soon as the professional is able, on reasonable grounds, to conclude that a child has been abused either physically or sexually or has been neglected. The law does not require the need for conclusive evidence of abuse before the professional makes such a report. What is required is that from an objective assessment based on the facts at hand, it would appear that the child is being abused or neglected. Further, a professional in the same field as the reported, presented with the same set of facts and dynamics, would come to the same conclusion of abuse or neglect. What that means is that if you're going to report sexual abuse in a child, you don't need any evidence to make the report. It's not your job. That is the job of the police. Another question that may be on your mind, is there any liability for failure to report? Important, failure to report is a criminal offense. Failure to report can open up the professional to a civil claim for damages by the victim or third party on behalf of the victim for failure to report the abuse and to put in place safeguards to protect the future well-being and safety of the victim. If you want to know if you can be sued by an alleged perpetrator for making a report, on the proviso that the report is made by the professional in good faith, any claim made against the professional will not succeed. The test for good faith reporting is an objective test, and regard would be had to the state of mind of the reporter at the time of making the report and whether or not the reporter was acting with a malicious motive at the time of making the report. In 2007, there was a review of the mandatory reporting laws in the Sexual Offences Act. Something else that you need to know is that Section 54 of the Sexual Offences Act of 2007 provides that any person who has knowledge that a sexual offence has been committed against a child must immediately report this to a police official. Any person who has knowledge, belief, or suspicion that a sexual offence has been committed against a person who is mentally disabled must report this to a police official. Failure to report is a criminal offence, and a person convicted in terms of this section is liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or both. Before I sign off, I think it's very important that you are aware of the warning signs. What are the warning signs that you need to be aware of? Here's Patty Fitzgerald from Safely Ever After and modernmom.com.
Hi, this is Patty Fitzgerald from Safely Ever After and modernmom.com. Today we're talking about red flag warning signs in a child predator's behavior. And sometimes, moms, they're hard to spot, but not if you know what you're looking for. So what are some of the red flags that might signal that somebody is a tricky person or thumbs down? Red flag number one, somebody who really insists on a lot of one-on-one time with your child, often excluding you. If you've got somebody who's working really hard to be alone with your kid, always offering to take them somewhere without you, pick them up without you, think about it. Do they really need to have that one-on-one access with your child? Red flag number two, somebody who repeatedly befriends what they call an outstanding child, making your child more special than the others and trying to lavish them with gifts, attention, and lots of one-on-one time. We call it the you're so special trick. If somebody has really singled your child out with lots of attention, lots of affection, and it isn't grandma, pay attention to that red flag. Red flag number three, somebody who's always offering to help out for free. Most people don't want to spend a lot of time with our kids for free. Music teachers, soccer coaches, people get paid for their jobs. So if you've got somebody who's really trying to help you out with free babysitting and free lessons, and they have to be done one-on-one, pay attention to that red flag. Not a good idea. Here's another red flag. Somebody who prefers to spend most of their time with children as opposed to having age-appropriate relationships of their own. If you're at a family gathering and one adult always wants to be where the kids are instead of where the grown-ups are, pay attention. Red flag. Another red flag, any adult who's really preoccupied with one child. Any adult who's really paying attention just to that one kid, making them their special friend, always trying to be with them, excluding you. If they're putting them up on a pedestal, pay attention. And last red flag, somebody who just looks too good to be true. If they're working really hard at trying to show you how great they are, how much they love your child, how much fun they are, and why they need to be in your family with free rides, babysitting, free treats, overnight camping trips that exclude you, pay attention, moms and dads. Red flags. Now, if you see one red flag in somebody, it doesn't immediately mean molester, molester, but it does mean pay attention, and you might want to limit the one-on-one access that they have with your kid. This is Patty Fitzgerald from Safely Ever After and modernmom.com.
In summary, this episode has been part three in a series on pedophilia. Part one gave us understanding of pedophilia in general when I interviewed Bly Reed, non-offending pedophile. Part two dealt with the brain science of pedophilia when I spoke to scientist, psychologist, and world expert in the field, Dr. James Cantor. You can find both podcasts on chaifm.com under Community in Conversation and on Spotify under chaifm. Today's episode was about mandated reporting. If you are a teacher, a doctor, a psychologist, a counselor, a spiritual leader, or a clinician, you are by default a mandated reporter. You don't only have a moral obligation to report child sexual abuse, you actually have a legal requirement. It is mandated in the Children's Act of 2005. Knowledge is power, and it's why I have done this series, to empower you with knowledge. I'm doing it so that we stop whispering about it, so that we confront it, so that we strengthen and embolden our communities, and so that we have the conversations that matter. I'm Kathy Kaler for Community in Conversation on 101.9 High FM.
It's a Community in Conversation. Join Kathy Kaler every Friday at 9 a.m. for Community in Conversation. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Right here on 101.9 High FM.